Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
Hello?
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Osio Ginli, Tahiju, Tahigu, and I remember who I am. This is Will Bluewater, and I just said to you in Cherokee, hello, cousin. How are you? I'm fine. We're going to be talking with Sky Mason and remembering his grandfather Red Elk tonight. And maybe or not, you'll get a little flavor for the way traditional families work, because I've never spoken with Sky before. I knew who he was. And matter of fact, I just said two or three words to him. We're going to talk about his grandpa from his point of view. How are you tonight? Say hello, Sky.
Hello.
All right. And I've spent a lot of time with your grandpa and did, I don't know, 13, 14 shows and
shared a stage with him a time or two, and he visited a group of us in Missouri. But I knew him pretty well, and you know, well enough to that he had a friend that wasn't so much a friend of mine, and I struggled with that, and he helped me struggle through some things. But anyway, he was quite a fella. But Sky, what I'd like you to do is just kind of let the spirit lead. You know what? He talked pretty well. Tell us about your grandpa from whatever angle you want to start. Go ahead.
Well, my grandfather, as you know, was a medicine man in a Hioka, and through the years growing up with him, it was very interesting because he taught me a lot of spiritual stuff. And one thing that he taught me before he actually taught me the serious stuff, like getting close with God or seeing any of the spiritual abilities, was he told me how to protect myself and how to become one with the Creator. And it was kind of strange because growing up as a kid, I was always kind of crying and shy. And that was just because everything that my grandfather taught me, that's what I knew to be true. And whenever I would talk to people, I would always somehow bring up the conversation of, you know, spiritual abilities and being connected with God. And whenever I would talk with my friends about any of that stuff, they would just kind of look at me like I was insane. So I never really connected with people. And that's one of the reasons why I never planned on reaching out and trying to help people, was because I was so shy and didn't know how to connect with people. But when my grandfather passed away, I just had this big feeling to start reaching out and helping people, because I just thought to myself, if my grandfather taught, because my grandfather taught so many people and he has helped a lot of people along the way connecting close with God and finding true connection with not only God but with themselves as well. So I just thought, since my grandfather has taught me all this spiritual stuff, that maybe I could help people like he did, and maybe even one day reach the same goal as he was trying to reach.
Outstanding. And that's the way it's supposed to be, folks. Traditional teacher teaches a student. Student never feels like they'll ever walk up to the teachings of the teacher. And both age and the teacher passes away, and most times the student becomes the teacher, and the cycle begins all over again, and that young person gains his own insights into Creator and continues to teach. And tell us a little bit about tell us some things. Well, for instance, now you might think I'm prying, but your grandpa, I wasn't sure if he was speaking about your parent. I'm not sure exactly who your or your descendant through his daughter or his son. Your mom was his, right?
Well, my grandfather adopted my mom, so
got it. Okay.
I guess we're not technically related, but we are, because everyone is connected.
Oh, your family, okay. And I guess, as I recall, she had some problems in life, or was that someone else?
Well, that kind of sounds like my mom.
Yeah, was it her? That had some problems in life.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yep, I recall him. He didn't talk about it a whole lot. He just said that his daughter had some problems, I mean, when you were younger, coming up with all the, I mean, you know, go ahead and, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. Like I said, I was just prying a little bit, but, you know, tell us about, you know, what it was like, at Red Elks and how we lived, and tell us about Michelle, how she's doing now, and go ahead.
Well, growing up, I wasn't always living here with my grandfather. Maybe 2-3 times out of the year, me and my mom would come up and visit. But when my mom started having a lot of back problems, because she has 3 herniated discs in her back, and she can't really take care of herself that well, she decided to move up and live with my grandparents, and that's where I've been. So I've been staying up here since I was 6, maybe 7. And with my grandfather, he is connected with a lot of spiritual stuff, but he was also very interested in the whole survival and not only going out and surviving because you have to, but going out and surviving because he wants to, and to just not only get away from, you know, technology and that kind of stuff, but just to become one with nature.
Right.
And so growing up, he taught me a lot about that stuff, because he always loved to build shelters and come out with new ideas on how to build tents and how to just not only be with nature, but to have fun with nature as well. And so whenever he would take me on one of his kind of camping trips, he would always kind of hint. He wanted to teach me this kind of stuff, but he would kind of hint that if I was at all interested, he would teach me the kind of ways that God has taught him. And so growing up, I wasn't really interested in that stuff. And to be honest, I didn't 100% believe in that kind of stuff. But when I was, I believe, 9, maybe 10, my grandfather had taught me how to levitate. And so when I was playing on a trampoline, my grandfather was kind of off just kind of building shelters and just having fun in nature. And when I was playing on this trampoline, my grandfather told me in order to levitate, you just have to believe that you're flying and keep telling yourself that you're flying. And as I was jumping up and down this trampoline, I wasn't saying out loud, but I was mentally saying that I'm flying. And I did that for about 15 to 30 minutes. And after that didn't work, I just kind of gave up on it. And I just started bouncing around and having fun on a trampoline like any kid would. But every once in a while, I would keep hearing myself repeating in my head that I'm flying. It was almost like how when you get a song in your head, it keeps playing without you mentally hearing it. It was kind of like that. And so after I was playing around for maybe five minutes after I had given up, that's when I started levitating. And when I was floating, it honestly felt like I hit the ground, because I came to such a hard impact stop. And at first I thought I had like landed on some glass maybe, but that wasn't the case. I was actually floating there. And when I told my grandfather, he was just shocked in amazement. And he said that I had a true gift, because God doesn't really allow a lot of people to be able to do that kind of spiritual stuff at such a young age, because most people have to take months, maybe even years, to reach that spiritual impact, I guess. My grandfather wanted to know if I could move around with my mind. And, I mean, I had a van maybe 15, 20 feet in the air. And I was just kind of scared because, you know, if I start flying around above trees and stuff, and all of a sudden I stop believing or it just stops, then
yeah.
That would, you know, be real painful. And so my grandfather understood. So I must have been levitating for a good 10 minutes. And when I was ready to get down, I asked my grandfather, how do I stop levitating? And what he said was, all you need to do to stop levitating is to stop believing. And that kind of shocked me, because how can you stop believing when it's happening right in front of you? And so it took me a little bit to get down, but what I did to get down is start thinking of science and the government and all that kind of stuff, and how levitating is pretty much impossible. And when I started thinking of that, I heard this extremely loud snap. And when I heard that snap, that's when I came back down. And so after I had levitated, that's when my grandfather took a big interest in me and started teaching me about other spiritual abilities.
Wow.
Yeah. And yeah, that's kind of how it all began.
I know he spoken before live audiences, you know, of thousands, and over the radio, you know, millions. But he told me that in all his years of teaching people how to get in touch with Creator, I think he only said he had maybe 5 or 10 people that reported back to him that actually. Not sure they were more, but those are the ones that accomplished it and said something. But I guess he spoke at a lot of churches, I guess, up in the Seattle area, and I guess at one point, probably 97, I guess it was when he went up to Canada. He had a lot of friends amongst the Cree, tell us, I'm not even going to suggest what you tell us. Just go ahead and tell us something. There's a lot to talk about.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, it's to just pretty much like pick any topic, and I could talk about that for days.
Well, what's your favorite thing that he taught? Because he taught about pyramids and UFOs and all kinds of stuff.
I guess my favorite would be how he told me that anybody, if they so desire to, that anybody can go and visit heaven without dying. And that's one of the things that I did once I went to heaven without dying. I was 12 when I did this. And essentially, my grandfather told me that in order to go to heaven, you just have to ask God if he'll allow you to go into heaven. And if you are allowed, then for him to wash you and to cleanse you in his blood, to kind of purify you. And once that happens, he'll either take you to heaven, or if you're not spiritually ready or mentally ready, then he'll wait maybe a couple of days or a week for you to reach that state of mind. But when I did go to heaven, I was, how do I explain it? When I was in heaven, it was kind of like my grandfather was guiding me. Like he was right beside me, but he wasn't, almost like he was in my head. And Well, when I got to heaven, I was in this library, and my grandfather told me to go to my book. And when he told me that, he told me, don't go to just any random place. Follow your heart. Follow, because your spirit is trying to guide you there, and you just need to listen. And so when I did that, I walked to the end of the library, and there was this blue book. And when I opened this book, it was it was full of pictures, but these pictures were almost alive, kind of like a movie. And what those moments was God kind of videotaping you as a child to however old you grew up to be. And another thing that was interesting too was in the picture or the movie thing that I was seeing, I saw this extremely bright kind of bright white sphere. And what that was that God's way of showing you throughout the years you grew up of how close you become to the Creator and how far you go away from the Creator. So it not only shows you growing up, but also shows how you grow closer to the Creator. And as I was looking at his book, my grandfather told me that if I go to this door that was at the other end of the library, that if I go there, that door was kind of magical. Like it would take you anywhere that you wanted to go. You can go back to the planet. You can go see Jesus. You can go to your own heaven. You can go to another dimension. It'll take you anywhere. You just gotta think about the place you want to go and then open it, and you'll be there. And so I decided to go to my own heaven to see what that was like. And when I opened it, it was just endless fields, endless plains. And I just thought, since this is so beautiful and yet so empty, how can you essentially add stuff to it? And my grandfather said that in order to add stuff to it, all you gotta do is think about it and it will appear. And so when he told me that, what I had done was envision a small little pond and a little bench and a couple lights, kind of like a park, a little area park for kids to play in. And then I decided to sit on this bench that I had created and look at that book a little more that God had made special for me. And when I was looking at this book, I felt someone placed their hands on my left shoulder. And as soon as that person put their hand on my shoulder, I just felt this feeling of pureness, of happiness, of kind of like that feeling of being home. Just, I guess the best way to explain it is every good feeling that you experience in life, like happiness, I don't know, there's so many good feelings, but it was almost like every good feeling just wrapped into one. When
I think they call that,
place their hand.
They call that joy. Yeah.
Joy, okay. But when that person put their hand on my shoulder, that's the feeling I got. And I honestly don't know who that person was, because, well, at first I thought it was God or Jesus, but I didn't look at the face, because my grandfather had told me that when you go and visit heaven and you see the actual face of God, that it is so pure and so holy that your body can't really take that spiritual or holiness, and you end up staying in heaven forever. And so that's the reason why I didn't look. But when I saw this person's hand, it was kind of a dark tannish, but it was very dark and tan, and he had a lot of scratches on his hand, like he had been through a lot in his life. And in his left hand, he had this stick, kind of like a shepherd's stick almost. And he had this extremely white, almost glowing cloth around him, kind of like a robe. And I'm guessing that was Jesus, but I honestly don't know. But that person told me that he wanted to show me something special that he doesn't really show to a lot of people. So after that, I put the book down and followed him. And he had opened this kind of portal into another place or another dimension. It was like this circle that just appeared, and I was looking to another place, and when he opened it, I was looking at hell, and he wanted me to see what hell was like, because, well, I didn't say this out loud when I was in there, but in my head, I was thinking that since heaven is so beautiful and just the best place, like, I wonder what hell is like for the people who have to suffer. And that's when he opened the thing. And what it was like was there were thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people, and they were pushing these extremely heavy iron mining carts up maybe like 70, 80 degree hills, and there were thousands of people mining this wall that had to have been thousands of miles tall, and it went on for it looked like infinity. And essentially what these people were doing were they were digging for more space for more people to come into hell. And
oh, wow.
As they were pushing these iron carts, there were these black demons behind them just whipping people, and there were flames and lava and stuff everywhere. And it was just a horrible sight. And then as I was seeing this circle or portal thing that he was showing me just went completely black. And as I was watching that, I was very confused. And I kind of poked my head in a little bit to see if maybe like the thing that he was showing me, if it moved into another direction or something. And as I was just poking my head around and looking at stuff, again, it was just complete blackness, complete darkness. And I asked this person, why is he showing you this? And he told me that this is the true hell, complete darkness, complete emptiness. And when I was looking at this, I thought it wasn't so bad, and I asked him if I could go into it just to experience what true hell was like. And he laughed, kind of giggled a little bit, and he said, yeah, but most people don't want to experience that. But if you want to, you could experience it. And as I was kind of stepping into this thing, he told me that in order for him to come back and kind of save me once I get tired of the true hell, all I got to yell was the name Jesus, and then he would come back and kind of rescue me. And so when I went in there, it was, I know this is going to sound kind of silly, but it was a lot of fun. Because when I was in there, I was just floating, kind of levitating in complete darkness, no noise, no sound, no nothing. And I was just floating there doing a lot of flips and spinning around and having a lot of fun. And I tried to imagine things into the true hell like I had done in heaven. And as I would try to picture these things, they would only last for maybe 1 to 5 seconds, and then they would just disappear. And when that happened, I essentially thought it was Lucifer kind of taking the stuff away. And so I kind of made it a game almost, where I would imagine something and then recently would take it away. And so I kind of went to the beat of music, and then as soon as I would imagine it, he would take it away. And so after I had done that for a good couple of minutes, I heard this extremely loud, angry voice, and I'm guessing that was Lucifer. And I just kind of laughed about it. And so after, I must have spent a good 2, maybe 3 hours in True Hell just having fun. And once I did get kind of tired of it, because I got real tired and felt alone and kind of sadness. And so when I got that feeling, I felt like I should go back. And when I called for Jesus, he didn't come. And so I started to panic a lot more. And the second time that I called for Jesus, he didn't come. And then that's when I really started to panic. And the third time that I called for Jesus, that's when he showed up and took me back to heaven. And I asked him, why did you wait so long to get me? And he said that he wanted me to experience the true hell, not just to have fun with it, but to experience what other people experience.
The fear, yeah.
So I guess that made sense. And after he had told me that, he wanted to introduce me to God, to the Creator. And I didn't really feel comfortable, because I thought that if I was in the presence of God, that I couldn't help but look at his face. And if I did that, I would be in heaven forever. So I told him that I wasn't interested at the moment. And after that, he just kind of vanished. And then I started to look at that book again. And as I was looking at it, this is kind of interesting. When I was looking at my book, I started to daydream, and in this daydream, I was in heaven again, but in a different part of heaven. So I was, it was kind of like a dream inside a dream, almost.
All right.
And what I was doing in this daydream, I was wondering what the Native American, the Indian heaven would be. And so that's when I started daydreaming. And when I was there, I saw this Native American or Indian chief, and he was smoking this real long pipe, and there were plains, like extremely flat plains for miles and miles, and it was just full of buffalo. And there were these maybe 20 to 30 Indians on horseback, and they were hunting these buffalo. And I was sitting next to this Indian chief, and I asked him, if this is heaven, how is the killing? Because killing is an act against God. And the Indian chief looked at me, and he kind of smiled, and he said that the Native American people hunting buffalo is heaven to them. That's what they enjoy the most. That's what they love to do. And so in heaven, that's what they continue to do, but it was kind of more like a game where they would try to hunt the buffalo, and the buffalo would try to survive as long as they can. I guess kind of a playful way to put it is kind of like tag, almost.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, they would see who, you know, how many people got tagged and how many people didn't, and that's how they would decide who would win. It was, again, like a game, and that was very interesting to me. And after I saw all that, that's when I came back from that daydream-like state back to where I was looking at my book. And again, I was looking at my book for maybe a good 5-10 minutes, and then I just said to myself that I'm kind of real tired. I want to go back to my body. And as soon as I said that, I instantly was back in my body, and I had opened my eyes. And when I looked at my grandfather, he was just sitting there smiling at me, almost like he experienced that whole thing with me, even though I didn't see him. And after that, I had just instantly gone to bed, because even when I did come back, I felt completely worn out, completely tired. And that's, I mean, I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but I have to say that
yeah.
my favorite experience with my grandfather. Sorry for talking so long.
Oh, no, no, no. That's what this, that's what we're all about. I try not to interrupt too much, and other than to say ho, you know, and that's kind of what we do here. Give people a chance to really go create here. Well, that's amazing. Let me ask this up. Red Hawk adopted your mom, right?
Yeah.
Now you look like you've got native blood. Did she have native blood?
Yeah, my mom is half blood and my dad is full blood.
What nation?
I guess it would technically be Nez Perce.
Say again now?
Nez Perce.
Oh, okay. Can you spell that? I'm sorry.
Nez Perce?
Oh, I got you. Okay. I missed a bad connection, and I wasn't quite getting it. Okay, I got you.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, you know, and so they were both Nez Perce, huh?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, you look it. You really look like it. And, yeah, they're really interesting people. My wife's from Portland, and I think one of the most memorable trips that I ever had was, we would travel back and forth between Portland, but when you get to Western Oregon, there's a place where you can turn off and go up into the Wallowa Mountains. And you know what? I don't know whether you can still hear me. I can't hear you. Oh.
Oh yeah. I can guess. Hear you. I just kind of put you on mute because I was talking with my grandma.
Oh, okay, good. And anyway, it was just an amazing trip, and it just seems like you just keep winding and winding and winding up into the mountains. And then, at a place, it's just a little bowl. I remember maybe, it might be a mile across a plain, and just a gorgeous place up in the Wallowas. And so we visited Chief Joseph's grave is up there, and but yeah, they're a good bunch of folks. I'm trying to remember if I knew anybody else. There's Nez Perce. I know your grandpa. Now, was he from that area and then went to Detroit to work, or where was grandpa born? You remember?
He was in Detroit for, I think, till he was 20, and then that's when he decided to go to Bible College here in Washington.
Ah. I know did he work as a cartoonist?
Yeah, he did that after a Bible college.
I see. So he went to Bible College, and see, we're getting into stuff he never really talked about.
Oh, okay.
when he was younger, I never had this conversation with him and just never come up. So when he was younger, so he moved out to Washington, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I fill in the blanks here. What was tell us a little bit about his early life, because I know when he was younger, I guess he was involved with trying to forge peace between gangs and stuff like that in Detroit, which would have been really rough. But tell us a little bit about. So he moves to Washington, goes to Bible college. Then what?
After he came to Washington to do the Bible college, he only stayed there for a couple of years. He never finished Bible college. And that was because whenever he would pray to God out loud, and there were a lot of other people there, whenever he would pray to God, he would talk to God like, how do I explain it, kind of in his own voice, own language. Because, again, he was in Detroit, and he had that kind of accent, gang sound, I guess.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he would talk like that. And that made a lot of people kind of frown on him. Because, you know, they think that when you pray to God, you talk to him with respect and love and not make it into kind of like a joke, I guess.
Yeah.
But that was just how my grandfather talked to anybody. And another thing that my grandfather said that angered a lot of the Bible people was that he didn't see God as God. He saw him as a friend, as a companion. And the reason why he talked to God like that was because he didn't want to, again, talk to God like he was God, high on a pedestal, so separated from us. He wanted to talk to him like he was standing right next to him. And a lot of these people didn't really understand that. And so after a couple of years, my grandfather got real tired of that. So he kind of quit Bible college, and then he started to do the cartoons and puppet shows, and eventually he started to reach out and start teaching people and becoming the medicine man that most people know him today as.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, I guess he had some native blood Shoshone, or I forget, what was it?
I think it was part Shoshone and part Cherokee, I believe.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, interesting. And how interesting. So what kind of... So after Bible college, he made his living kind of as an what did he do? Did he do his art? Or, I know. I've been you go down to like a tourist place or and see police and they'll make a cartoon of you. Did he do that kind of thing or?
Yeah, a little bit, but. For the most part, he did stuff in the newspaper, sending cartoons in the newspaper, and then
he
would go to the public library and do puppet shows for kids. And again, like you said, he would draw pictures of people, but kind of like not an actual sketch of them, but putting them in kind of cartoon people.
Caricature, right?
Yeah, caricature.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, and I can't even tell you what year. I guess I started talking to them probably 2002 or 3. Or I didn't start this program until 2004. And between them and like 2010 or 12, I think we did like 15 interviews. And they're all still available out there on the internet. His wisdom will be out there, long as people are interested. And So what do you do to keep body and soul together? What do you do for?
Well, at the moment, I don't really do much. I just kind of start. I try to reach out to as many people as I can and help them spiritually. And by doing that, I also feel myself growing a little bit. But at the moment, I'm not doing anything real big. I plan to do that in the future.
Gotcha. But you've got a family of your own, right?
What was that?
You have a family of your own, a son?
Oh, no.
Oh, I saw a picture of you holding a young child, and I didn't know whether you were married or not.
Oh, no, that was my nephew.
Oh, okay, I see. And are you still living out on his property?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So how is Michelle?
She's doing good. She's still working at the Twin City Food Processing Factory.
Ah.
She's good, still in good health. She plans to keep working there until she pays off all the bills and cars and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, she's doing real good, still in good health, good shape, good spiritual mind, good everything.
Still got, what, 6 or 8 chihuahuas around, huh?
We lost a couple of chihuahuas, but a couple months ago we got 2 other dogs, a Boston Terrier and a mix between a chihuahua and a terrier, I think.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
But I guess for most of his time out there, he didn't... I guess he didn't get like water in the house. And this is the reason why people will say, hey, you know, we're different because we still know how to live the old ways. And mm-hmm. y'all ought to listen to us. And, you know, or you might just be screwed one of these days, you know. that's what I'm into, too. I mean, you go to prophecykeepers.com, and you know, one of the first places you'll see is that we've got a voluminous family security and preparedness library, and shoot, I've got probably a terabyte of stuff that I don't even have on the internet. Just all kinds of information, all kinds of things that you'll probably never use, but information's good to have, because if you don't have it when you need it, there'll always be a solar panel out there, and you'll be able to turn up a laptop for a while and take a peek, and you want to know something about a specific subject, and that's kind of what I put together, and he and I, oh my gosh, hang on a second. Area code 845, who's this?
Yes, hello.
Hey, who's
hello?
This?
My name is Selena.
You're on the air.
New York. Do you
calling
me?
From
New York.
I'll hear you, go ahead.
I want to know, see my daughter find a fiancé soon.
You want to know what now?
See my daughter going to find a fiancé soon.
Gee, you know, I can't understand what you're saying. You want to know something, like, what was it now?
See my daughter going to find a fiancé soon.
Oh, you want to know if your daughter is going to find a fiancé soon.
Right.
Well, that's a good question. We're not a we don't do like readings on the program.
You good?
So you might have called the wrong show, but we do appreciate your call.
What are you doing?
And,
you can tell me.
Beg your pardon?
You can see my fuge?
Oh, gee, I don't know. Don't know how to help you, man, but thanks for calling. Well, yeah, I couldn't understand what she was saying, Sky. But but anyway. Well, look, we're almost getting near the top of the hour and the end of the stream here, but it's been fun. It's been fun. And I guess we've now got you on the Native Prophecy Council. We're not real active. I mean, we were really active when your dad, you know, came on and did a lot of teaching, and I tried to stay out of it because I've got too many opinions. But you've got a lot of old friends on that. That's the Yahoo group, Native Prophecy Council, and got about 100 people on there. We get a few, you know, a few messages a week about stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. I encourage you to get on there, and anybody else that's within earshot, you know, come on the Native Prophecy Council and the Yahoo groups and get to know us and toss out questions sure stay in touch. Sounds like you're sitting in a car out near a highway.
I'm sitting on the porch, and we live
maybe
20 feet from the highway.
I could tell you were outside somewhere. But anyway, we got a few more minutes. You got another little story you'd like to tell? What, 5 minutes?
I got a lot of spiritual stories to tell. I could talk for months about spiritual stuff.
Well, what we'll do is we'll get you on again soon, and
okay.
And you could come on and as much as you want. It's your birthright and probably your responsibility, and you probably view it as such, don't you?
No, not as my responsibility. I mean, it's more of kind of like a gift from God, almost.
Yeah, right.
Reach out and help as many people as I can.
Yeah. I was saying to those to whom much is given, much is required. Well, God bless you. Thanks for being such a student. And for continuing his work and keep it up, and I'm sure you'll find a lot of satisfaction. Well, anyway, we'll talk to everybody else this week. Thanks a lot for coming on, and Sky Mason, and good to meet you. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well. We'll let her go now. Good night now.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
The hot sun on the dry ground. sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around. Out away is a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high.